Good evening, everybody. And I'm delighted to be visiting Australia once more. And this little song is just for you. Every time it rains, it rains. Rain.
This is ABC Sunshine Radio, and we'll be back in half an hour without Tony Baldwin, Kevin Daly, Peter Whitford, Jill McKay, Angela Webber, Adam Bowen, Lance Curtis, Peter Smalley, Drew Forsyth, and Bill Conn. Music for The Inner Person by Arthur Greenslade and his G-People. Special guest Conway's Carnival, Sir Jock McHaggis and his other piano, Taproom O'Schooner and the Ocker Person's Chorale. Meanwhile, we're slightly out to lunch.
Hey, is that you, George?
Ah, Harry, how are you? I didn't know you were running today.
You know how it is, another day, another bag of oats.
What have you been doing with yourself?
I've been out having a bit of a spill. Went down the beach for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, you're looking fit and relaxed.
Ah,
it's been bloody hectic round here.
Yeah?
Yeah, I feel like I'm on my last fetlock.
Sorry to hear that, mate. How's Joyce and the foals?
Oh, I'm afraid Joyce hasn't been the same since young Jonathan got gelded.
I'm afraid young Jonathan hasn't been the same since he got gelded either, eh?
Yeah, well, as long as he doesn't turn into some kind of horse's hoof, I don't mind. Anyway, how are things going with you and Cheryl?
Oh, she's been getting on me back. Reckons I've been seeing other mares. I told her it's a stud farm. What do you expect me to do? Not as if I enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah, it's a dog's life.
But at least we don't have to chase some stupid mechanical rabbit, eh?
Hey, which reminds me, who's going to win today?
Prince Regent by half a head from Slumlord. We all thought we'd let him win because it's his birthday next week.
But it's everybody's birthday next week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Clever bastard. Anyway, you and I both go wide early, but get boxed in on the home turn.
Sounds easy enough.
Hey, man, what is it that I do again?
Cross straight to the rails, run in the middle of the pack, then trail off badly.
Oh, yeah, I remember, far out.
Dope to the eyeballs.
Hi, everybody, this jockey of mine's been using the whip a lot lately. Does anybody mind if I throw him coming out of the back straight?
Yeah, yeah, fine, yeah, fine, yeah, no worries, that's cool. Cool, man.
Do you want me to trample him?
Oh, thanks for the offer, mate, but don't worry about it.
Well, the lights are flashing now. Better get ready.
Yeah, did you get a bet down, George?
I got 5-1 that my trainer's going to punch me jockey's head in after this.
Good odds. Oh, here we go. Be seeing you.
Is our favorite storyteller, Miss Helen.
Hello, girls and boys, and welcome to Silly Billy Storytime. Now, if you remember last week, Barnaby Bunyip was invited to a tea party under the giggly gum trees. Barnaby was very excited as he skipped down the lane. He went nearly as fast as Uncle Ray's Gigi's before they got nobbled. The sun was shining and the birdies were tweet, tweet, tweeting so loudly that Barnaby could hardly hear the results of the 2:30 on his teeny-weeny tranny. Which wasn't such a bad thing, because he'd already dropped a bundle on the doggies the night before, and apparently Big Uncle Barry the bookie was looking for him really hard with a few of his friends. Poor old Barnaby never backs a winner. Not like me, your old Auntie Helen. And now, girls and boys, if you'll just give me another drink. Beauty. As a special treat, I've got a dead cert for the 3:30 St. George Handicap at Sandringham Park. It's Silver Streak to win in Montchevel for a place. Okie dokie.
Miss Helen, Uncle Ray and Uncle Barry are outside and they look a little bit cross. They want to talk to you.
Oh, quick, stall them, Brian. I'm going for the fire stairs, okay?
In next week's Silly Billy Storytime, Kevin the Kangaroo finds the magic beanstalk and Barnaby Bunyip is interrogated by the gaming squad.
And now it's time for our weekly Pets Corner with our regular veterinary consultant, Bruce Losis. Welcome, Bruce.
Hello, it's nice to be with you again, and as usual I'm speaking to you from my busy surgery here in the clinic at Drainage Hills, and this week a letter from little Susan Pancreas of Septic Tank. That's an up-and-coming area out there, I know, Susan, and you write, Dear Bruce, for a long time I have wanted to get another pet after my first one died. It was a cane toad. But I'm not allowed to have another cane toad because my father threatened to get rid of it. The first one was killed by the man next door because he said it ate his cat. Do you think I could keep a cane toad secretly? Well, I don't honestly know of anyone else who's ever admitted having a cane toad for a pet, Susan. But before I discuss this in more detail, I'd like to concentrate for a moment on the gentleman next door with the sledgehammer. Because that was how he killed your poor toad, wasn't it? I can't for the life of me understand how anyone living in the suburbs today could justify owning a sledgehammer. Most folk have gas or oil heating, so it can't be for splitting immense logs, and hardly anyone has huge piles of granite in their backyard they need to break up. So why has he got a sledgehammer, Susan? And how did he get into your backyard with it? I'd watch this fellow very, very carefully if I were you. Not that your father will be much help there. He's obviously got a similar sort of implement tucked away himself. What is it, a broad-bladed axe or a long-handled pick? Such men are pathologically violent, Susan, and if they drink, as they invariably do, then it's not the cane toad you ought to be hiding, but yourself and your hapless mother. Unless she's already in her grave, her head bashed to a pulp with one dreadful psychotic swipe. By the way, don't believe a word of the story about your toad eating the cat. That's a good one. Now, to discuss the merits of getting another cane toad and hiding it, I have a feeling it wouldn't do any good. Your father is just as likely to tear the place to pieces in a drunken fury looking for it, accompanied by the oaf from next door. What you have to do is get your mum to take you away for a while. Go and stay with your auntie in Tasmania. Her husband's probably dead, so you won't have any trouble there, and they don't have cane toads down there either, so you'll be able to get your mind back onto nice, healthy things like conservation and inbreeding. All right, Susan, thank you for your letter, dear, and now this is Bruce Losis saying goodbye for now, and do try to remember, if you ever feel the urge to get yourself a sledgehammer, ask yourself, do I really need it?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. They say that Melbourne's great for painters and dockers.
Bottom of the Yarra, mate.
And Canberra simply heaven for talentless hawkers.
House will rise.
The grass in surface paradise is greener. Want a drink, Dad? And you know, Sydney money's laundered so much cleaner.
10 grand in the fort, thanks, Walker.
But city lights have never shone for me. Just beat it. And there's just one place in the bush where grass grows green.
Mummy, take me back to Griffith. Back to Griffith, New South Wales. Take me back to Griffith, where the harvest never fails, where the money's weighed in bushels and the gold is stacked in bales. Give me my plantation home in Griffith, New South Wales. Take me back to Griffith, where the mafiosi graze, where the real men all wear concrete boots and homes have colonnades, where policemen always stand downwind when summer bushfires rage. Take me, take me, take me home to Griffith. You take the heather and I'll take the gunja.
Woo! Give me that roach, man.
Take me back to Griffith, where the family's herbivore, where my Cosa Nostra mommy makes those cookies I adore, where the right side of the tracks is on the wrong side of the law. Take me on a mainline trip to Griffith.
Now we're sailing down the Murrumbidgee to my grass castle. Scotch heel and heather never tasted like this.
Take me back to Griffith, where the grass is dinky dye, where the lads sing sole mio as the crops laid out to dry. You can say arrivederci, but you'll never say goodbye. To the place where hay sells dearer than corn, to the folks that harvest their own garden lawn, in the good old town where I was born. That's Griffith, near the mighty Murrumbidgee. Oh, hi. Ah, that'll be the next shipment.
Please, please. Just the one?
Yeah. How much?
$6.
$6? What a rip-off. There you go.
Thanks.
Oh, do you give your TA concessions?
Got your card?
Yeah, here.
Oh, I'll give you $2 back then.
And what about student concessions?
Got your card?
Yeah.
Right, it's another $1.50 off.
And do you give unemployed concessions?
Yes.
Oh, here's my card. And our war service and single mother and TPI, right, it's good, exactly, ATAA. Oh, I think that's a lot.
What about your key to the city, love?
Oh, it won't fit in my pocket.
Right. Well, let's see. It's 1, 2, 57, 10. I owe you $27.50. There you go.
Thanks a lot. Bye.
Hey, you forgot your ticket.
Oh, it's okay. I don't want it.
What?
I don't use the buses anymore.
Ah, there you are, madam. A profitable day, I trust. The Rolls is waiting just around the corner.
Hello again, and welcome. And now today, something really amazing. We'll be looking at a sensational find in the world of art. A rare painting thought to have been lost for centuries. I'm referring, of course, to Leonardo da Vinci's missing masterpiece, the Mona Deidre. Now, Professor Scalapini, what makes you so sure that this is indeed a rare da Vinci?
Well, we've carbon-dated the painting, which puts it well within da Vinci's era. The style's very much like da Vinci's. The use of light, the brushstrokes, the softened outlines are very indicative of his mania aigre period. Yeah. Even the way he exploits the pigment to obtain that smooth finish is strongly suggestive of da Vinci's touch. And, of course, it's signed by him.
And most elegantly. And the fine brown hairs all over the painting. Is that da Vinci's use of chiaroscuro?
No. It's more his use of cappuccino. It's where he spilled a cup of coffee on the canvas.
That's amazing. How can you tell?
Well, da Vinci had a drinking problem, you see. He could never find his mouth in that great beard of his. Consequently, most of his paintings are covered with food and drink of one sort or another.
Even the Last Supper?
Oh, yes. It's not widely known, but the Last Supper is, in fact, the remains of a three-course meal, which missed da Vinci's mouth altogether and ended up on a wall. And if you look closely, you can see that Judas's head is actually a piece of carrot.
That's absolutely amazing. Now, tell us more about this sensational painting, Professor. What period of da Vinci's work does the Mona Deidre represent?
Well, I think we can safely say that it represents his awful period. That was when da Vinci rather fancied himself as a forklift driver and was a bit put out by the fact that they hadn't been invented yet. So for a while there, he just sat around in his underwear churning out graphic offal.
Well, such as?
Well, apart from the Mona Deidre, of course, there was the Last Brunch, still life with thong and a series of Oriental women painted on black velvet. Mm-hmm. In fact, you can still see them around today.
And aren't they lovely? Now, tell me, Professor, who actually was Mona Deidre? Do we know?
Well, we certainly do. It was his landlady, Mrs. Deidre McPherson, whom da Vinci didn't get along with at all. She used to complain about him shedding whiskers all over the furniture, and he called her La Vecchiata che beve la mia acquaragia, or the old bag who drinks my turps.
But of the painting itself?
Well, it poses a bit of a problem for art historians because it seems to anticipate the surrealist by 450 years, and as you can see, it's anatomically impossible for Mona Deidre to be doing to herself what da Vinci has painted.
Yeah.
And, of course, his imaginative use of the chainsaw motif was without parallel until the 20th century.
And that absolutely amazing moustache.
The moustache? Oh, I did that.
From across the seas, around the globe, out of the outback, and into your local theatre, it's the Cooey Newsreel.
The
the Antarctic, and Australia's famous icebreaker, the Bjelke Dan, pushes south through the frozen seas. This time, expedition members Dr. Narelle Bunsen and Professor Warwick Chilvane, seen here dipping fellow scientist Gary Bulking in whale blubber, will study the effects of prolonged alcohol consumption on the livers of elephant seals. Seals at the Australian base on Whitlam Sound have become addicted to drinking in recent years and tend to lumber around the base, weeping into their flippers and rolling heavily on personnel. Australian biological research brings benefits to the animal kingdom of the polar wastes. Wales, home of poetry and song, and of course the handsome heir to the British throne. And at the annual West Wales I Stedford, Australian poet Greg Eureka reads his magnum opus, A Child's Christmas in Dubbo. Greg accompanies his rendition with appropriate farmyard noises and his own unique brand of helpless drunken laughter. The stage is buried in a hail of leaps as the local audience shows its fervent appreciation. A proud son of the Australia Council triumphs in romantic Wales. Communications. And this antenna in the shape of a giant banana provides citizens of outback Queensland with the latest television programs beamed from the Dennis Lilly satellite far above the earth. This family at the tiny settlement of a hopeless creek crowd eagerly around the flickering screen to see their first ever show. It's Breed of the Century with popular compere Tony Turpitude. But what's this? Dad has kicked in the screen and stormed out of the house to cut down the towering banana with furious strokes of his stock whip. His reason? He wanted to watch the football on the other channel. The wonders of the television age come to outback Queensland. The Cooey Newsreel, across the globe, out of the outback, and into your theatre.
I'm a slave of fashion, I dress accordingly.
Sheep man, sheep man.
I'll be right behind as you follow me.
Sheep man, sheep man.
I'm dressed to kill to my high cheekbones.
Sheep man, sheep man.
I'm ahead of my time cause my watch is slow.
Sheep man, sheep man.
I'm dressed to kill, I'm on the prowl. Dressed to kill, I do my midnight howl. I look so different, just like everyone else.
Sheep man, sheep man, sheep man, sheep man.
I know I'm gonna be out here with my friends, cause I can be myself when I look like them. I'm outfitted, simulated, guaranteed. I know who I am, cause I watch TV. I'm right behind you.
Order in court. Brian Leonard Grope, also known as Eddie the Wrench, alias Ethel Perkins. You have been found guilty on 6 counts of breaking and entering and possession of stolen video recorders to the value of $10,713.22. Before I pass sentence, I have only one thing to say.
Yes, Your Honor?
Any chance of a Yakahachi 12-function super video with cordless remote?
And now, towards 1788. This week we look at the year 1769.
1769 was a particularly uneventful year for Australia. It was to be the year that Captain Cook would land at Botany Bay and discover Sydney Airport. but he had a bad cold, so he put it off till the following year.
Yes, so that meant for the whole of 1769, Australia was still populated by the Australians, who were later to become the natives, and soon after that, the blacks.
The main highlight of 1769 was the disastrous wheat harvest. There wasn't any. And a particularly nasty fight between two red kangaroos at the 35-mile peg at Cloncurry.
Yes, and 1769 will also be remembered for the massive cyclone that would have destroyed most of Brisbane if it had been there.
And, of course, in November, gold was first discovered in a shallow creek near Coolgardie in Western Australia. It was found by an Aborigine who was fishing for brim and was probably the largest nugget ever found in the region. However, having gutted three fish with it, he threw it back in the river, probably because of the very poor state of the commodities market at that time.
In August 1769, three Martians landed at Ayers Rock, took some pictures and flew off again. It is thought to be the first time Martians ever landed in Australia.
And in late December, there was an event that was to change the future face of Australia. Two Dutchmen were washed ashore after a shipwreck on a desolate stretch of coast, which is now a hamburger stand at Exmouth in West Australia. Unable to see the future potential of the site, the men wandered off into the desert and died, which meant the hamburger stand in Exmouth is now run by an Italian and not a Dutchman.
Well, that's about it for a very tedious year in Australian history. Next week, 1770, and things really start to liven up.
Yes, 1770. Work begins on Sydney Harbour Bridge and the Comte de la Perouse inaugurates the Gabba. We'll tell you about it next week. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Morning, Miss Harlow. I'm Gershwin. Vic Gershwin, and I've got a deal for you. You're looking for terrific, catchy new music themes for your Brighten Up ABC television campaign, right?
Oh, indeed.
Well, I've got them by the bagful. I've composed themes that are exactly tailor-made for your TV shows. What were they called again?
The shows that most urgently need these new theme tunes are Play School...
Beauty. No worries, pal. I've got just the thing in here. Somewhere... Here we go. Wrap your ears around this, pal. Just imagine the viewers are switching on the telly and up comes this great new theme for, what was it called again, show called?
Play School.
Play School, right. What a winner. I don't know how I do it.
It may well be an original concept, but, are you aware that Play School is an educational program for preschool children?
Perfect, but it's uncanny, isn't it? How I managed to get the feel just right, yeah?
Well, I'm not absolutely sure about that one.
Look, I'll tell you what I'll do, Miss Arlo. You can have that one free and the next two at half price. Now, listen to this masterpiece. It took me 2 years to write this one, and it's perfect for,
The News in Brief?
The News in Brief, of course, my favourite show, Top Talent, never miss it when I can. Just listen to this.
Mr. Gershwin, do you claim to have composed these tunes yourself?
Of course.
You're a liar, Mr. Gershwin. The first tune was written by Henry Mancini and the last by Jacques Offenbach.
Did I tell you that? Hello. If you're not happy, I could do some alterations. I'll take in the middle out on the first one, adjust the chorus on the second one, and for the last one, I'll do a revamp of Edelweiss with a diminished seventh for no extra charge.
Mr. Gershwin, you're a con man, a fraud and a plagiarist.
Well, nobody's perfect. Hey, what do you think of this little number for Nationwide?
Get a sing little song. I don't get mad because I don't mean that wrong, but I'm tight like that. Yeah, tight like that. Hear me drinking to you? I'm tight like that. Well, I come home like about 10:30. Put my key in the lock, but I couldn't get in. I was tight like that. Yeah, I was tight like that. The wife had put the bath on because I was tight like that. So I called her the wharf. Hi, let me in. She said, bugger off, boy, you're full of gin. You're tight like that. Yeah, tight like that. You should have stayed on beer, boy, not tight like that.
Not a happy sight, is it, friends? The degradation of a fine man through the hell of the devil's brew. Friends, friends, put the temptations of foul spirits behind you and stay with good old Aussie beer.
And the new handy aerosol will give you the perfume of the public bar without a drop passing your lips. Your mates will think you're great, but when you're late home, the wife will still love you. Ackerman's new spray-on safety stout. Smell like a brewery safely in the privacy of your own home.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Punnett. Nice day, isn't it? I'm from Dougal Products Limited, and I believe you're having trouble with mammoth droppings.
Pardon?
Yes, I understand you're probably a bit reluctant to talk about such matters, but it's quite common these days. Woolly mammoths really know how to ruin one's good furniture.
I'm sorry, you've lost me there.
I wouldn't worry. That happens to most people who have this problem. All you need is a few items of quality, which I just happen to have here in my suitcase, and your problem days will be over.
My husband will be rolling in shortly, and you might be better off sorting this out with
him.
Now,
you're going to tell me his favourite lounge chair was damaged beyond repair by the sharp tusks of these menacing creatures, aren't you? Not to worry. I have just the thing.
Look, if you don't mind, I've got better things to do with my time.
Yes, I quite realise that. Try the bites in the bathroom. Don't they make a mess of the medicine cabinet?
What are you on about?
Lungfish in the cupboards. Pterodactyls playing havoc with the light fittings. No worries, I've got just the thing.
Look, none of these things you've mentioned exist in my house. Mammoths, trilobites, nothing. So please go away.
I see your problem. Dougals have just the thing. I'll just get out of my case here.
Ow! It's a mammoth!
Yes, and actually this month we also have a special on saber-toothed tigers that come complete with a species of Cro-Magnon man. Ideal little kitchen or rumpus room.
Oh!
Hello. We've been slightly out to lunch for my surgery in Drainage Hills with a script written by Tony Baldwin, Kevin Daly, Peter Smalley, Steve Johnston, Ken Matthews, David Witt, Angela Webber, Adam Bowen, Colin Bowles, Robert Caldwell and David Polterack. My nurse was Linda Hughes, script described by Julianne Ford, anaesthetist John Farkas, surgeon Ferrell Maver, medication dispensed by Kevin Daly and Tony Baldwin.
John, Look, it's the peasants. They're revolting.
Well, dear, what do you want me to pull the blinds?
Oh, they're coming through the windows. Help!
Monsieur et Madame Potter!
Yes, look, please go away. We will give you anything. Money, movie passes, cake, anything. Just... please go!
No. There seems to be some mistake. We are from Marat's Peasant Agrarian Service.
Oh, goody. Are you going to sing?
Yes. Here goes. Pierre?
To dear Mrs. Potter, writing to thank you for the offer. It's got lovely whiskers and we've called it Desmond.
Ah, lovely. Merci beaucoup.